From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's The Leftovers with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to HBO's The Leftovers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone, welcome to The Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm Thump.
And welcome to the show. How's everybody doing today?
I'm going to put in the pick right now. The Leftovers can get snubs for any other Emmys as far as I'm concerned, but give an Emmy nod and possible win to the sound mixing guy for that one Foley effect. I want to be a fly on the wall of like one of the biggest Foley studios in Hollywood, because they are asked to do the craziest things in this golden age of TV and movies.
Well, can you imagine the director and writer going to Justin, okay, this is what we want you to do.
We need you to pull off a dick flop.
Yeah, and you have to do it. I mean, I asked Jay this before. I actually saw Jay today. We were over at his house. But, Mike, have you ever seen the movie Bachelor Party?
Is that the OG Tom Hanks put him on the scene movie?
Yeah.
No.
God, man.
But I will say to the Foley,
there's a scene in there. Nick the Richard. Can we say Dick? I guess Jay did. That's his name, and he pulls it out, and it's, you have to see the scene. But it's like, and they get all, they're like, oh, and they apply. You have to see the movie. I'm not doing it justice, but it's
to help Jack, I haven't seen Bachelor Party, but I have seen the Patty Duke show, so I did enjoy the reference that they made.
Kissing cousins, identical cousins. Is it weird that I knew almost 99% of the music played on this episode?
This was like really tailor made for you,
because most of the time I'm like going, I don't know who that is. But I,
yeah, Wu-Tang Clan, you were totally out on, but this, yeah, but this is your scene, baby.
You give me Captain Tennille, I know it.
But to your point about the Foley, Damon on Instagram today said the Foley guys had to use a ferret that they dropped on a quilt to get
a
live
ferret.
Yeah, a live ferret they dropped on a quilt to get the sound. Knowing Damon, he's probably just, you know, making a joke, but still
trying,
funny.
He's trying to get the people who are ferret lovers mad at him.
Because he doesn't have enough people mad at him. He's trying to.
I was
going to
say, PETA's going to be coming after the Leftovers now.
Maybe there was like no ferrets hurt harmed in the filming of this.
To be fair, though, PETA was probably up their butts to begin with when the first scene of the entire series was Dean shooting and killing a dog.
That's true.
Yeah, it could have been. Bring in the stunt dog. If you had Lassie, you wouldn't shoot Lassie, would you? So
yeah, but another going into the other side, if you will, or Kevin's underworld or the in between or whatever place he goes when he dies, and written by Nick Cuse and Damon Lindelof, Nick Cuse, son of Carlton Cuse,
our good friend
who co-wrote last season's famous International Assassin episode.
Who was this close to being on the podcast, Nick? This close.
A fantastic episode that almost like said, I don't say poo-poo or boo-hoo to all the almost mythology that was building up to it, and just like said, no, what really matters is you kind of stopping whatever the heck it is, you're like, stop running away.
Do I get any kind of credit, any kind of crackpot theory points, because there was a nuclear war in this episode?
Did you
just not in the proper timeline?
Yeah, I mean, I just say
there's gonna be a nuclear war.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's what's gonna happen, and that's why. Nora's got like radiation burns. So
I get nothing
for this. Remember, I had the Charlton Heston scene at Planet.
Yeah,
the end of the scene at Planet.
I must have just stopped paying attention at that point.
Nothing.
You get a big old flop.
Nice.
You get dick for that.
All right.
No, nice. I think that's good. I would give you some credit,
like a
for
quarter
Jack.
Of a
if
point?
I'm able to dole it out, I would say I'd give you some credit for that.
Well, I'm gonna take you over. You're because Jay would never. Jay's cheap, so Jay wouldn't let me. You know, would give me nothing. So I'll take that, Mike. Thanks.
Well, speaking of what you were saying before earlier, though, Jay, it's really interesting because, yeah, I'm trying to figure out, I know some of our feedback sort of addresses what the ending is. It sort of what are the creators trying to say? What is the show trying to say? But it's so interesting to me how, you know, you've built up, like you said, this sort of, I wouldn't say mythology, but this definite like philosophical drive that is really churning a lot of these more mythical elements that have existed through the past two seasons. And then what it all amounts to is a very human realization at the end, you know, that considering that among all the craziness that happens this episode, one of the Kevin's final words is, you know, we effed up with Nora. Yeah. And for Kevin to go through this entire walkabout like experience only to realize that is actually really lovely in that I wouldn't say that it wastes our time because these were experiences that we greatly enjoy from an artistic perspective. As per usual, this world is so crazily built that it's so much fun to navigate. But to then have, you know, the big piece of wisdom after we've got these weeks and weeks built up of, okay, Kevin needs to die because he needs to get the song, to do this, to do that. He had a laundry list of things to go in and do. And it turns out that the only reason he really needed to go there was just to sort of get closure, to admit that he was vulnerable and to realize, oh yeah, this is a relationship that I need to salvage.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic. And again, it sort of is able to represent what Lindelof, I think, post Lost is really trying to do, which is saying, once again, we go back to the season two theme, let the mystery be, unlike the season one theme that boomed over the course of these credits, that, you know, it doesn't really matter necessarily what the big question and answers are. It always comes back to these characters.
Yep.
So exactly. will we get a Nora and Kevin reunion?
Well, it would seem with
I think we're all in agreement. Yeah, we're done with that. It's not going to happen.
Well, let's pause here to thank people who make the show possible, and we don't have a more detailed recap. Blame me, Memorial Day.
I'm not going to take the blame.
Livations took up the note taking time, but we'll cover all of the important topics. We got a lot of emails to get into today about this episode. I'm so excited to jump into that. As well as Jack has prepared, quite possibly one of the greatest crackpot theories in the history of the game. that'll close
I'll
out this episode.
I'll go get my phone and I'll phone it in. Okay.
Honestly, the one you phoned in was the best one you had all season, to be fair, I think,
And which one? I can't remember what that.
That was the Kevin Sr. episode. When you said that Matt was going to kill Kevin?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was your Judas one, I think, right?
It still could happen. I got one more episode.
I don't know if Matt's going to make it, to be fair. I want to thank people, thanks to possible our patrons. This is a listener-supported podcast, as well as all of the podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network. So thank you to our listeners that support us over at patreon.com/JayandJack. Become a patron today. Go to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link. All right, so let's jump into this episode here. It starts out in an interesting way. It's the second-to-last episode where we have the season two title credits, which has also been the season three one. But in season three, it's been a different song each week, or a different kind of, even, what was it, a couple weeks ago? It was just a French guy whispering. Mm-hmm. But we had the season one.
I'm going to be naked.
Very ominous, depressing theme from season one overplayed the season two title credits. Interesting choice there. What do you guys think the motivation behind that is?
I mean, one of the things that's always really interesting about this alternative universe is that it brings back people from Kevin's past to exist in sort of this purgatorial state. I mean, last time he had to assassinate Patty, and you had Gladys there, and you had Holy Wayne there. This time we're going to get Dean serving as one of his accomplices, Officer Kevin, the bereaved officer, Australian asshole Kevin, was the Secret Service guy. So
yep.
Maybe it's just sort of a symbol to him and to us about how much the past really reverberates. And it's going to start off, as you're about to mention, with a flashback as well from the time between seasons two and three. So, you know, I think we talked in the very beginning of this season about the killing off of Dean and how that might represent, you know, how the show in a way is sort of blowing away what existed and is sort of moving on with whatever happens from then on. But maybe this is sort of retroactively regrading that, you know, that it's saying these characters are not able to necessarily move on completely their past, whether departure affiliated or otherwise, are always going to have their effect on the show and on these people, much like the season one theme, even though it has not existed over the course of almost 18 episodes, will still be there at the end of the day.
Yeah. Jack, what do you think? What are your thoughts there? Because I think Mike has a good point. It does bring back a lot of these characters and kind of referencing it and showing it in context, especially second to last episode, maybe a little callback as well, just for nostalgia's sake.
It was great to see Patty again. I mean, that's always good. But I got to wonder if the actors like an episode like this opposed to a regular episode, because they get to be, you know, especially Justin, because he's playing so many different characters. You know, he's doing so many different things. I would think it would be more exciting to go to work doing this than a regular week. I don't know about you guys.
But I think so.
I mean, it's fun. It's different. It's crazy. I mean, the Patty-Kevin relationship's always been good television. I wish we could get a chance to talk to one of them and say, do you guys enjoy this more than just a regular episode? Just fine. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great episode, but who knows what's going on? At the beginning, you got Nora and Kevin were in the bathtub together, and they seem like they're the two happiest people in the world
it shows, because even the end is like we effed up with Nora,
right.
And this is showing maybe the good thing was the good parts of this relationship, because when there was the big blow up between Kevin and Nora, which was our live show that we did here in Raleigh about a couple weeks ago, we all kind of mentioned how it seemed like it was a flawed relationship because they were both broken and they both weren't talking to each other. So it kind of made sense that it went thermonuclear, and we didn't think it would be salvageable at all. But this episode seems to pivot away from this Book of Kevin,
right.
You know, savior storyline to then say, no, this is just Kevin running away from another good relationship, and this one is the one he should try to save. But is it too late? Is it too late?
Well, no, because they also talk. They were gonna, you know, live out their lives with each other, because they're talking about how do you want to be buried? How, you know, what do you want to be cremated? This and that. And she says, well, Matt would never do that. And he says, F Matt. You know, I thought, wow, they really did care for each other. I think this episode showed, like you just said, it showed more than ever that they really did care for each other. They just had issues that that all came to a, you know, in that hotel room, all, you know, stuff they've been holding inside. You know, in real life, if you know you hold something inside, it just blurts out and you go, I wish I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah. And I think that constantly on the previous on for the past 2 weeks, we've seen Kevin tell Nora, you know, you should go be with your children, essentially saying his own version of F off. And I feel like they've been kept repeating that because that's a line that I feel like is digging in to Kevin. And you have to assume that maybe Kevin's sort of experiencing some sort of flashback to this moment. It's interesting because throughout this episode, specifically, we get moments where, you know, Kevin's saying something when he's reading the manuscript, for instance, and then we see flashes of the things that are being referred to.
Yeah.
And I wonder, are we supposed to take that as Kevin's having those flashes right there, or is it more of a reminder to the audience about what those things symbolize?
Maybe both.
Yeah, it's probably the both. Like, oh, hey, audience, this is what happened. A little refresher. Get you back in that headspace. And then also for Kevin, too.
I mean, because his expression on his face, it did look like he was reacting to what we were seeing.
And we know that, you know, even a couple of episodes ago, we know that he's not exactly in the best state mentally, considering how he was projecting Evie onto this poor random library worker in Melbourne.
Which, she'll again, I think, you know, unspoken hero of this season. She went and even still... Kevin basically assaulted her, still tried to help out Kevin, knowing that he was mentally ill. So kudos to that person.
What did you guys think, going back to this Nora-Kevin scene, about Kevin's plan to, first of all, be taxidermied, and then Nora seems like she's going to have her way with the stuffed Kevin at any point in time that she wants to?
Well, that's why she wanted him to have a beard, right?
Yeah, because
And so that's the origin of Kevin's beard, which, better or worse payoff than the origin of Jack's tattoo?
Better, much better.
Just a tad.
No,
better,
that's right? Come on.
Just a hair better, if you will.
Yeah, just a hair. There you go, a hair better. I just thought it was a great scene, because you could, to me, I'm watching, I go, they loved each other. They really did. They love each other.
Yeah, and it's again, I think it bookends both sides of the episode well, like that this moment where, you know, and I think all relationships have that time where it's just that over the top love, everything. And then eventually relationships, as time goes on, you know, stuff happens and eventually you get resentment built up or whatever. And it's not going to be the same as it was like maybe the first 6 months of a relationship. So it was nice to go back to that time to really see, cause we'd never got to see it really. And it gave more weight to the, we effed up with Nora, because for this season, pretty much Nora has been kind of spastic and lost and wanting to go back to her kids. And Kevin's kind of, you know, however you want to see it, is him kind of being full of himself with this whole Book of Kevin thing.
Well, I think both the whole book of Kevin, it was being forced upon him, though. I mean, they kept, you know, Matt. Was it forced? Well, they kept pushing this whole Book of Kevin. If your people keep telling you that, plus Nora, is it really her? I mean, you can't blame Nora for wanting to see her kids again.
No, not at all.
If there's a chance that she could, like I said, I think we said a couple when this first happened, I go, yeah, if my kids all vanished and, you know,
you would throw
a party. Away.
I think you've said that many times.
I probably would, but you gotta take the animals with them, and you know, no, I'm kidding. But no, if I could go, take a chance that where I'd be obliterated or go find my kids, I would take a chance. I would take that chance. I mean,
take
it just
chance
and
on
I think
me.
Little ABBA.
ABBA brought us in right with SOS at the very beginning of the season, so it fits, and it's more music that Jack knows. So.
Exactly. Win. And I think, I don't know if she'd really, I don't think she would have sex with the taxidermied Kevin. But given the weight of the flop.
Only
possibly.
If she could put the plastic bag over his face.
No, I think as long as the weight of
as
that
long
flop
as the beard's
is still there.
The beard.
And Kevin's
well, how do you you got to make sure that
you have to make sure that rigor mortis sets in at just the right point, and then you say, okay, stuff it.
I was going to say, it's got to be stuffed properly. That's
God. This is horrible.
You wouldn't want him to just half stuff it, because then it'd be like, I'm getting shortchanged here.
Right? But in all fairness, I mean, the show kind of just hit it over the head. That's what he said.
So you're not taking the blame on this?
No, it's this is part of the show, the TV show. But I will say, we'll get to that when we talk about it. So coming out of that, we kind of have Kevin, who's just he's ready to go. He's ready to die.
Yeah, so I don't understand necessarily, and I guess this is sort of like Senior's big role in it. I mean, even from his own independent episode, it seems like he had his own thoughts about how this is my story, my son's just in it. Because yeah. You would think, you know, Kevin Jr. obviously wants to do this, especially after talking with Lori, having that very poignant conversation where he said, I felt more alive when I was dead, ironically enough. So then to have him stop Kevin drowning himself, pull him up, and Kevin's like, okay, I'm good. And Senior's like, okay, then we'll do it again. It seemed a little odd, but again, you need to look back to Senior's whole idea about the way that these things work, and that he feels that the reason why Kevin's doing this is for me.
Well, you know, if I was drowning myself and somebody lifted me up and stopped the process just in order to do it again, I would probably go full. I'd be upset. Here I am. I've already committed myself to doing it, prepared myself, and you're lifting me up halfway through my drowning.
It's like we just want to be really sure that you want to do this, really sure. And all, in all fairness, they were drugged. They just woke up, so they kind of just still don't know what's going on.
No.
I mean, I guess there is a chance that they could have thought that Lori did it or something against Kevin's will.
Yeah,
but they didn't say that.
But they don't know. I can kind of see their perspective because they just woke up. They don't know what happened. They assume Lori convinced Kevin's gone. They see his horse, and then he's in there. So I think they just want to.
I go this far too. It's like, well, you had your chance. I'm not doing it now.
But again, all of his apostles there definitely they still cared about what they wanted, because it was pretty much like he comes up. He's like, you need this, and you want to make sure Evie knows that she was loved, and you want to know about the shoes and this, and you need Christopher Sunday to tell me this song. And
All right. Drown me again.
Yeah. So it's interesting how willing Kevin is to do this, and I think that's what's nice about the second time when Michael kind of brings up, like, why is he doing this?
He said he'd never been in a better place, right? That's what he told Laurie. Plus,
I felt more alive. Yeah.
More alive, but I think he also, what does he have at this point?
Well, again, it's that whole he's running away from the relationship again, which is what
exactly,
he always
does.
Yeah. So he gets put under, and did anybody feel this episode that he was going to die? Like, this wasn't going to work this time? Was there
not,
any
when I first heard the International Assassin music, I knew that he was going to go through. Yeah. But I guess the question is, you know, how would things... And I guess he can't die in this. I mean, I know that Virgil's initial rules from the hotel was essentially don't drink the water, because the episode's going to end with him essentially dying with this giant nuclear strike, and then he comes to in our world completely fine. So, you know, maybe because he was in a way the most powerful man in the world, he was not able to, you know, pass on to either another plane or remain in this plane and just forget about everything that happened.
But also kind of it breaks that it has to happen in Miracle Texas, too.
Right.
But he arrives naked on a beach this time. No bathtub entrance.
Yeah, I knew we were getting naked Kevin when we heard. I saw brief nudity. Oh, yeah, it's just going to be naked Kevin.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Jennifer Aniston's a lucky lady. And then he's almost killed by a Russian mob guy or whatever, and then our good friend swoops in and saves Kevin at the last moment.
Well, he blows the Russian away.
Yeah, from a parachute? Did he paraglide in?
Yeah, it seemed like he parachuted in. And lots of fun symbolism to the sort of reverberation of the past coming into this realm. Some fun sort of pairings. When, you know, Dean, when they approach Kevin's little retirement shack and Dean says, oh, you're going to invite me in? I don't know if you guys remember, but I believe he said the same thing to Kevin when he first, like, parked his truck in Kevin's driveway early on in season one with a six pack to talk about the dogs.
Yes, you're correct.
Was this like Jack's tattoo, though, going back to that when he's at the little retirement shack and was it Tahiti or wherever he was at? Bally?
I don't know.
I can't remember where he's at. I'm just saying.
He is Kevin Harvey. Did we get his name the last time, International Assassin?
His name was Kevin Harvey, Assassin. When he came in as the cop the second time, I don't know, his name might have been like Kevin Darvey or something. But it seems like he's now in the International Assassin timeline, which again begs the question, we're about to get into identical Kevins, to quote Patty. Are there two different lines going on here? Are we assuming that there was like one line where Kevin continued to be the International Assassin and now another line where bearded Kevin becomes the president? Or did they just sort of like split off at one point and this is the new line that they exist in? I know that's confusing for me to outline, but it seemed confusing to sort of to grasp.
Well, is it? It's kind of, it seems whatever Kevin chooses to be. It's a bit of a Gozer situation where... at least that's how I see it. You know, it's like in the hotel, you could kind of choose what uniform he's wearing, and that would kind of be what, you know, Kevin, choose last name, would end up being. So, how would there, in the afterlife, or whatever Kevin goes, how would those timelines continue on when he's in the, you know, land of the living?
Mm.
So to me, it would almost seem like it's just whatever his mind needs to process through is how he exists in the afterlife.
So that being said, did you like that we went back to the International Assassin route, or would you have hoped that we did something new entirely?
Well, it makes sense he would go back to that because that's kind of what he was expecting it to be.
Right.
Or probably what he was hoping for it to be. So it would make sense that that's... If it was on his mind, that's how it would go. Or it wasn't until he looked in the reflection that it took him to.
You go back to what you want to be, what you're what you want to be. Like maybe the Kevin that was the that was killed, the wrong Kevin. He wanted to be a Secret Service person. I don't know. Maybe that's how it works. And Dean obviously likes to shoot things, so. that fit right for Dean's character.
Well, Dean kind of gives him the rules. He kind of breaks everything. He breaks his sweet sunglasses. And as he can't look at his reflection any time. And Kevin kind of makes his, you know, before he does anything, he needs to do these things, right? His punch list, if you will, of, you know, finding out Grace's kids where the shoes went, telling Evie that your family loved you, and getting the song from Christopher Sunday. And Christopher Sunday happens to be the Prime Minister of Australia in the afterlife, so that's pretty cool.
What an upgrade.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of cool for, you know, in terms of the probably an Aboriginal Prime Minister would be a big deal in Australia, and I think it's kind of neat if he's living in his own timeline and that's what he chose. I think it's cool. He gets a call from the boss, and the boss happens to be God.
Yes. So we talked before during the Matt episode about David Burton, this actor, appearing the previous two times that Kevin went to the hotel. It does seem like he's back once again. I think the question still remains as to whether or not he is God or whether he's going through a similar Kevin-like thing where he was mauled by, you know, Cecil the Lion's descendant, and now he's sort of is existing in that plane. Because again, we get this thing later on where, you know, he told Meg that he fed her the line that he's God, but he also seems to have a lot of omniscience as well at the same time about things that are happening.
Yeah. And again, maybe he's just died enough times and been there that he just knows. It's kind of like from Groundhog Day where it's like, I'm a God, not the God, but a God. Maybe God's just done this so many times that he knows everything that's going to happen. And maybe this is for him, what he has done. You know, he's been mauled by a tiger, died in a, you know, fell off a cliff. Maybe it's happened so many times and he's been there so many times that he just knows kind of the ins and outs of this this after or this underworld more than Kevin does. And he's really cantankerous about it too.
I also realized that I meant Fraser the Lion, not Cecil the Lion. I think Cecil the Lion is is that a cartoon character, Jack?
No. Cecil is the one that was killed by that dentist.
Ooh, that's the one.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
and on almost the 1 year anniversary of Harambe's death. It's a grim reference that I accidentally made there.
we're pleasing PETA in so many ways this episode.
The dentist guy. Yeah, that was a good guy.
But anywho, David Burton is his boss. And he tells him to look at the mirror, and that's when it takes him to the most powerful man in the world, the President of the United States. So we said, again, another place where maybe we're wrong about this season, the Guilty Remnant's not coming back. There's no point. But in this other world.
Oh, wait. We all didn't say.
I think we all said it wasn't going to happen.
No,
did you say
no,
it
no.
Was?
I said they were going to come back. I said at least one of them.
Okay. Well, so, it doesn't count because it's in the afterlife.
Okay. It doesn't count because fine. See, Mike would have said, yeah, go ahead and take it. But Jay, Stingy Jay says, no, you can't have it.
This is a good cop, bad cop scenario, Jack.
So I guess in this alternate afterlife world, the Guilty Remnant have taken over.
They have.
Which I guess, again, like it makes me wonder if this is a direct continuation. I mean, obviously not, because in the previous time that Kevin was an international assassin, he assassinated Senator Patty Levin. So unless she made a recovery and decided to stop running for president, but it seems like whatever political party that was affiliated with the GR last time Kevin was there, he is now the head of it. And he is speaking about, I guess, in this new world where Kevin's the leader of the free world, they all sort of exist under the GR's temperament. There's no family, there's no religion, and people seem relatively happy, at least more full of gusto than the GR that we've seen of the past actually do.
Well, maybe it's for all those people that have like really annoying and trying families. It's like it's a lot easier just not to have one. I'm not saying that for personal experience. I'm just saying.
I think you're implying something.
It sounded pretty. I took it personal, but that's okay.
The first moment where it kind of said that this didn't really matter was when Grace's kids seemed to not even care or know where the shoes were. which I kind of set the tone for how this is going to end up.
At some point, if you died, you care where your shoes are at.
But I think it's just it.
Here, another thing about this scene as well. I mean, maybe I feel like maybe it was just me like looking too much into things. But were we all like thinking ahead of Kevin two steps this entire scene? Like he's giving a speech. He's got to be the president. By the way, not really good prompter reading skills on Kevin's part. The point is that it's not supposed to come off like you're reading the cue cards. But then, you know, when he starts talking about this essay contest with a kid, my mind jumped to Grace's kid, and it turned out to be the case. And maybe I'm not in Kevin's situation where he had a lot to deal with all at once, but it seemed pretty telegraphed once we jumped into that scene that this is where we would be.
Yep. I agree. But you know, it's one thing. We're sitting here Monday morning, evening quarterbacking it. You know, Kevin's there. He's now just immediately become the president of the United States of America. So it's tougher. You know, it's hard to put ourselves in those shoes.
He wanted the job, so be prepared.
But again, this is where my theory is that whatever. It's the afterlife is whatever, or maybe it's just adjusts to whatever that person who's dead needs are. Or Kevin, it really is the most powerful man in the world. It's not just in reference to him being the president. And that when he goes, wherever his mind will take it is how this world or universe then kind of shapes itself around it. Because compared to the last time he was there, it seems completely different. The souls that were there are still there somewhat. But it's a completely different scenario than mm-hmm. the last yeah, time we were there.
And I wonder if, we finally find out what David whispered to Kevin when he was on the bridge going to Miracle to throw Patty down the well the very first time he was there. The Scarlett Johansson, Bill Murray-esque Lost in Translation mystery has been solved in this case. It is not let be. But I do wonder if what you were saying, Jay, is true in that he really is the most powerful man in the world, and that him and seemingly maybe David sort of have these powers. Like you said, I'm assuming that not every person who comes into this purgatorial realm is able to shape their own will and, you know, mold the world to their liking. You'd have to assume that they're just sort of filling space. So maybe Kevin really does have this holier than thou type of power in this realm for some reason. Maybe his midichlorians are off the charts, I'm not entirely sure. But it's really interesting that it seems like you said, every time he's here, it's bent to his will. He's not a participant in someone else's narrative. It's all his narrative all the time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe also, too, in order to get to Christopher Sunday, he's now the prime minister of Australia. I mean, you'd have to be someone important to get to that high level, right? So the president of the United States should be able to go in without just one facial scan. Shouldn't be the whole thing, but that just...
But I think it is. I think it has directly... I think he's shaping it. It's similar to Inception, where it's kind of a blank canvas, and the architect that's there is the one that kind of builds out what it is. So... that's how I see it. I think you go a lot of different ways with it, but that's how I'm kind of viewing it, just based on how it's played out so far.
And that's a good comparison as well, because we also don't know what amount of time has passed in our world as compared to the amount of time that passes in the alternate realm. I mean, back in the end of season two, when Kevin gets shot, we don't know how long he was on the floor of the community center. Granted, he only spent a short amount of time singing hotel karaoke, but it seemed like some amount of time passed in the real world as well. So I have no idea if it's a direct one-for-one comparison in terms of time, or much like Inception, you know, time is compounded in a different world the deeper you go.
Yep. A dream within a dream. an afterlife within an afterlife. So this rally gets broken up by Evie, who shows up. Almost the inverse of in the afterlife, what happened to her is that her family was killed by the Guilty Remnant in an airstrike, and she is the only survivor. But she's still a protester, still an activist through and through. They take Kevin away, but he still wants to talk to Evie. He's got to check another person off his list. So they are in the limousine together. Kevin says, "You know I'm not the president." She says, "Yes." So he thinks that she knows or she's in on what's going on. So he kind of fulfills his mission for John and tells her that your family loved you. She quickly says, "Oh, they're dead." Yes, you're not the president. You're just a figurehead, et cetera, et cetera. Again, Kevin's just – what he's setting out to do is kind of being thrown in his face a bit, which, again, is just kind of knocking the narrative that we thought was going on this season off its tracks and rumbling towards where it ends up going to at the end of the episode.
And another throwback to season one, Evie protests the speech by singing "Love Will Keep Us Together," which I don't know if you guys remember back in Matt's first episode, I believe there was a montage set to "Love Will Keep Us Together" of Matt's sort of day-to-day routine.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. Because wasn't it Mary's favorite song or something like that?
Oh, I can't remember. Because I remember "There's a Reason" was the song in the second season, which was Matt's montage. So Matt, this is the only season where Matt hasn't gotten a montage to a fun oldies tune.
There's a reason.
We have one episode left. One last chance. He starts coughing up water seemingly drowning, even though he's not in water. He wakes up in the real world, or is brought back to life in the real world. The storm is in full effect. The whole ranch is flooded. The flood is coming. He tells John, he seems hypothermic. He tells John that he told Evie, told Grace the kids didn't know where the shoes were. But he did not talk to Kristen yet, so he did not get the song. Even though it
that,
seems like,
and Kevin Sr. seemed upset by that.
Yeah. Cause, it seems like John and Michael don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
But Kevin Sr. is still,
well, he goes, "Did you get the song?" He goes, "I was working on it."
Kevin Sr. Wants to, go ahead and kill him again.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the main difference between this and the International Assassin episode is that, if we're comparing to what Kevin undergoes to get there, International Assassin, we were held underwater for an entire hour long. There was no room to really put your head above water. But here, we're following Kevin in his footsteps, literally, in that there are a few moments when we sort of peek our head above water and get some breathing room and are able to sort of figure out, okay, what the heck just happened? We're back in this real world. Now we dip our head back under and go back into the world, which I actually kind of like. It was good to sort of just get our glimpses to sort of remember the contextualization of everything and the stakes of everything, especially, Senior is going to say, even though it ends up not being correct, that the fate of the world depends on it. And that's what you need to realize amidst all the craziness that's happening is Kevin has a mission, and this is why he needs to succeed in his mission.
Now, could you hold a loved one underwater? Because remember,
it depends on the loved one.
That's true. Kevin said, Kevin Jr. said to Kevin Sr., his dad said, "You're going to have to hold me." And you could see his face was like, "I am going to have to hold you."
Yeah, well, because I think the body also, the thing about drowning is that the body is like struggling for air, and the body will really do anything. I think when you're drowning, there's a point where you'll go unconscious. And if you're able to find a means for yourself, you will be able to find air at the end of the day. So that's why Kevin has to time himself to the teeter totter as an example so that he can't escape.
He also had a rock weighing him down, too. So that.
Yeah. So essentially his dad is his rock here in more ways than one.
Hold me down, Dad. Hold me down.
And people criticize the Kevin Sr. episode, but it shows that in showing his mind and where he is. Shows how he is able to drown his own son because he has that firm of a belief. This is what he has to do.
And I can't remember if it's in that episode or the first episode when they talk about the Abraham Isaac story about how Isaac was 30 years old. He wasn't just a boy, and so maybe that was again little signals firing in Kevin Sr.'s head of this is my story. I'm the one that's fulfilling
I'm
this
Abraham.
Big mission by sacrificing my son.
Yeah.
I'm doing the dirty work.
So he goes back And he they need to they want to go to DEF CON one, which is was anybody else like, oh, I thought it went up instead of down.
I remember War Games correctly. I thought they were correct.
Oh, okay.
I knew it from War Games too, Jack.
There you go.
Well, I feel like I learned a lot about a nuclear holocaust situation, but not to get all of my information from
an
HBO.
Have you never watched War Games?
I have, but I don't remember the DEF CONs. I remember DEF CONs. I just remember the numbers.
Well, I think things have gotten a little muddled because remember in the early 2000s we had the color coding system instead of the DEF CONs,
which that would get more intense as opposed to getting shorter in numbers.
Orange, because red is the worst, right?
Mm-hmm.
It goes red, orange. Yellow's like cool.
It's like always that yellow. Chill. It's never green, but it's always yellow.
Yeah.
He's basically going to a bunker because is it the Russians are going to nuke the U.S. And he gets to the kind of security check-in portion. It's scanning his face. He then has to scan his member. Now, this is obviously a call out to the fans out there, because it's in season one where he's running around in sweatpants. The joke was, I mean, because Justin Theroux is a gifted individual on many different levels. Not just a great writer, but is gifted in other ways. A fun call out to it. I said to myself, like Colleen and I both said to ourselves, I hope there's like a thud or like a thump.
Yeah, there was a thud. Yeah.
I do like how the wrong Kevin was kind of looking, and then Kevin looks at him like, dude, really?
I also like how they decided to scan the member because they're like, oh, people with the right resources can totally get plastic surgery done on their face. Why would you not think that you can also get equally for the same amount done on the junk as well? The intel probably isn't out that they'd be doing, genital scans as well, but it's something that can easily be fixed too.
It's something you may not think about, but now if you're going to do something, it's not just, you have to do every body part, everything has to be.
I can't wait for the face off sequel.
That'd be the porn version, wouldn't it?
But the technology's just not there yet. It can recreate
at least,
a face,
maybe,
but it
in
can't.
This sequel, they might look alike. So maybe then, there we go.
Well, speaking of technology, do you like the sort of questions that were posed to him that you get when you forget your Amazon password?
Yes. And again, another essence of him kind of projecting this world. Who's your Secretary of Defense? And he says Patty. And Patty shows up, and she even says, "You brought me here. I was gone. You've already moved past us, and you brought me back here. You help me, I'm going to help you."
If you want help, that's the last person I'm going to call.
It's funny that he would project that he needs to do a penis scan if he is creating this world.
Yeah, except, and you need to put my penis out, and you have to take a look at it.
Oh man,
it was a funny scene. I think everyone had a good laugh with that.
That being said, if Kevin's writing a romance novel, if he's really thinking about that scene where he has to scan his penis, God only knows what's going to exist in that romance novel too.
That's true. Oh man, Fabio on the cover of that romance novel?
Kevin.
You know it's Kevin.
That's true. That's true.
Kevin with Fabio's hair.
It's Kevin and a female Kevin kissing each other. Captain Kevin Carvey hit the seven seas.
I'd buy that book.
Oh, man.
And then there's going to be another universe where Kevin is like this best-selling romance author.
That's in the epilogue.
Yeah, exactly. That's the epilogue. It's like a Barnes & Noble where Kevin Carvey is selling copies of, In the Time of the Merciful or whatever the name of his book is going to be.
Oh, man. Patty wants to end it all, and that's her ruse here. We have a special, was it the vice president shows up And I thought this was going to be Lori. I totally thought it was going to be Lori.
I thought it was going to be Lori also.
Yeah, and what a surprise. I mean, I think we were sort of – we've seen Evie obviously a few times in this season, whether real or otherwise. But, you know, even though we keep seeing Liv Tyler's name in the credits, I think we're all sort of wondering – when is Meg going to come back, if at all? I was totally surprised to see her here and sporting a new haircut.
Yeah,
I was also shocked. I didn't think it was going to be her.
And I think it also goes back to what you said earlier, Jack, about looking at the actor side of this, in that Liv Tyler is playing a totally different personality, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Than Meg. And it's so interesting because I feel like in the real world, Patty's plan would be something like Meg would concoct. But for some reason in this world, Meg is totally like the... She's definitely hard-hitting, and I think she's very firm, especially when she, you know, talks to Kevin about what needs to be done. But at the same time, she's not nearly as diabolical as she was before she ended up dying.
Right.
Yep. But is it because in the afterlife she has found love? And
didn't she get driven away from love to begin with to join the GR?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe now in the afterlife, she's found love with none other than God himself. You know, she's a changed woman.
Yeah.
Just a thought, just a guess. Patty wants to end it all. The ultimate reminder. Everybody wants to end it anyway. So let's just blow it all up. Meg says, well, you know, we have to, was it the Fisher contingency or something like that?
Fisher protocol.
Fisher protocol. Now, is that a call out to our own Ethan Fisher?
Yes, that's why everyone hated it. Just kidding. I love you, Ethan.
That was Mike that said that, Ethan. That was Mike.
But there is a key behind the fourth aorta or whatever, and they have to kill this guy, essentially. And
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that.
And it is actually Kevin's twin brother, who is Kevin Harvey, the international assassin,
who is also blessed.
Yes,
as we find out later on,
they have identical penises. That he was able to make it through the scan.
Oh man,
not like a fingerprint.
So Kevin decides to jump back into his Harvey self by taking Patty's glasses, which was a funny scene. God guides him to face him off. What's David Burton's skin in the game in this situation? Like, is he really driving him, or is this, again, just Kevin's consciousness just kind of driving him to this point?
Could be... Don't know.
I'd like to think that David Burton, for some reason, whatever sort of omniscience he might have, he's the only other person besides Kevin who knows what's going on, knows the meta aspects of everything, and is sort of guiding Kevin through. He has been the metaphoric earpiece in Kevin's ear the past couple times. Now he is the literal earpiece. But I think, again, Kevin shows how he's on a different mission this time, or he literally throws the earpiece away and says, I don't need your guidance this time. I'm striking out on my own.
Yeah.
Right.
So he goes in, matches the penis, and takes out people. Takes out Meg, maybe just because he just wanted to. Maybe he's never a big fan of Meg.
She did rape his boy, Tommy.
That's true. Maybe Tommy never shared it. We don't know.
Do you think Tommy told them all about that? Yeah. All of his like dalliance with the guilty remnant before he came to Texas?
I think they've been hanging out with the, they're both on the same law enforcement team. So, you know, stakeouts and stuff like that. What do you got to talk about?
I don't know.
I'm sure. I'm just throwing it out there that he would have some reason to do it.
But again, it's the afterlife. Who cares? I don't know. So we then get to the kind of the climactic scene for Kevin, where there's this second kind of football case that she opens up, and it's the book that he was writing. He reads this poem and he decides that he does want to end it. He does want to blow it all up. Basically to end running away, to end coming back here. He wants to just be done with it.
Right.
And there's no probably greater way to say I don't want to come back here than nuking all of existence.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we sort of saw brief glimpses of this in the very beginning of the season when you see Kevin bagging it. You're wondering, yeah, like, what exactly is he trying to do? It seems like, again, he tells Lori last episode, I felt most alive when I was dead. It seems like he's really kind of been chasing that high, and it sort of led to the detriment of his relationships. And so, you know, he's essentially flushing his stash down the toilet in a way.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you know, I want to go cold turkey. I don't want any access to this. But this scene, I mean, first of all, I have to point out again, Patty singing Identical Kevin's was hysterical, because Patty, at the end of the day, is still like a master troll, especially in the afterlife. And I also loved Justin Theroux's performance as the two Kevins saying F you at the same time.
Yes.
Everything I ever wanted.
That was funny.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And so he decides to kill the international Kevin Harvey assassin get the key.
He asked to be killed.
Yeah. And can I say it was kind of a gruesome scene. There was a lot of blood. It was really intense.
Yeah, I very handily kept my hand like covering the bottom half of the screen because I still wanted to see if anything interesting was happening. But if people follow me on podcasts, you know that I'm very turned away by any sort of visceral, gross body horror stuff. And having one person dig their full hand into, ooh, another person's body cavity was a bit of a limit. We were reaching a limit for me.
and the blood squirting all over the white suit. That helped.
Yeah.
Happy Memorial Day. Red, white, and Kevin was feeling pretty blue after this whole experience.
I get it from a symbolical standpoint. Like, just showing that emotional therapy that he's going through, like literally digging into his own heart, saying that he effed up with Nora, literally, breaking his heart. To end this and to try and go back and right what's wrong. So he gets.
And what did you guys think about the Beach Boys God Only Knows choice? Did you enjoy it? Was it a little too like?
I liked it because again,
too much tonal whiplash.
I liked it because again, it was music I had heard before.
I mean, it's arguably one of the greatest songs or popular songs of all time. I think it could be argued. From a critical perspective, but
has it been on the show before?
I don't believe so. I know that we repeated Love Will Keep Us Together, but I can't remember if God Only Knows had been done on the show previously.
It's been on another show that I've watched, and it was driving me crazy all last night. But anyway,
so I think it's appropriate in the context of where Kevin is and where he wants to go from this point. But again, it's this show has done a pretty good job of kind of having this the music that is playing kind of counter what the scene is, even with playing the season one theme on top of the season two titles. It was jarring and seeming like a weird tonal shift, and this was in the same vein as that. So they turn the key, Patty and him go up to the top and see all of these nukes just flying through the sky and then to white.
And another great matching moment where Patty offers her hand and Kevin takes it. I believe the first time that Kevin went to this place, I think he offered little girl Patty his hand and she took it when they left the hotel to go to the well. So again, really nice symbology moment there.
Absolutely. And then he wakes up in Australia, the flood or the rain has stopped. So the flood did not happen. You have John and Michael who are in the church with him, waiting over presumably what was his dead body. And then we have a Kevin Sr. on the roof, kind of in shock, you know, everything that he was working
towards. Kevin Sr. on the roof.
Best line he could have said was, I was wrong.
but
call out to another famous guy.
Kevin Jr. goes up there and I will say... his son was fairly gracious in that, all this for nothing. Because I think in all of it, I think Kevin realizes whatever he was going for wasn't the real thing. He had thing.
It wasn't for the mission he was on. It was for himself.
The constant question throughout his time in that world was, why are you here? And I think Kevin was sort of living in a state of denial until he actually came to literally face himself down and realize, oh, the reason why I'm here is because not only I want to help these people, but I'm trying to escape.
Yeah. Running away from one, the best thing that's probably happened to him.
But you got to feel bad. You got to feel bad for Kevin Sr. because, you know, you've twice you've held your son underwater. He's for a mission that you wanted him to do, and it turned out he didn't need to do it.
Yep.
From Kevin Sr. standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. From Kevin Jr.'s perspective, is essentially him going to therapy and having a breakthrough. Right. I mean, because his therapist she's a little busy at the moment. She's 47 meters deep at this point. But Kevin Jr. was able to, you know, come to his own senses here. So I guess it wasn't all for naught, and he feels a little bit better in that he was able to discover something about himself. And you have this really fantastic song at the end, The End of the World by Skeeter Davis, which I think is essentially saying, you know, it's the end of the world because you don't love me anymore. And so it's a fun connection to both these catastrophic claims that have been taking the hold of the show's reins for the past few episodes, and the idea that Kevin realizes that his life's mission is essentially to find Nora once again.
Yeah.
Right.
A couple things here. Will he be able to find Nora in time?
I don't know, especially since it seems like from next time on, she's going to go through the machine. He'd have to hop on that horse and go real quick if he wants to find her. But the show has also worked out in very convenient ways sometimes where maybe it could happen. So I don't think it's necessarily out of the realm of possibilities. I'm going to say maybe a 10% chance that they find each other.
10% chance. What percentage do you give it, Jack?
I'll give it 11.
Oh, okay.
Price is right.
Son of a bitch.
Second thing, since we did not see Lori in this afterlife, can we say that she's possibly still alive?
I don't know, because wasn't the argument that you made during the hotel, you know, permadeath verse, was that some people weren't there because they had moved on peacefully, that there's this idea that maybe some people have unfinished business and that's why they sort of hang out in that realm? And maybe Lori, we talked the entire last episode about how she sort of said her goodbyes and felt content with, you know, how the world worked. So maybe she didn't need to go through that intermediary process. She sort of skipped a step to whatever lies beyond.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think she's gone.
Okay. All right. Chris Sunday, we didn't talk about it, but he said, your dad's an idiot. The song was about not stopping the rain. It was about bringing the rain. I just thought that was a really poignant moment and they kept saying the whole time, it's like, your dad's crazy, but if I say he's crazy, this whole thing is crazy. So an interesting, pivoting moment in this season, I think.
Yeah, right? And it's interesting in that, you know, I know we've been saying that David and Kevin have been the ones to know everything that's going on, but does this hint towards the fact that maybe Chris Sunday knows a little bit as well, speaking towards his, you know, his mysticism? He was one of the original Aboriginals that seniors sought after to get part of the song. Maybe because of that, he also knows a little bit about what's going on too.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Otherwise he'd pull an Evie and be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. Cause yeah, he didn't, it wasn't like a, yeah, he didn't know what was going on. He knew and was able to reference Kevin Sr. So good call. Good call. Anyways, final thoughts here. Second to last episode of the entire series. One episode to go. How do you guys feel?
I'm feeling good.
I think the final episodes, the final words of the episode being now what, I think is very indicative, because we've had this entire season from a variety of characters built up to this day, the 7th anniversary, and it happened. And everything seems relatively fine for now. So I guess the big questions are, you know, is there something else that happens on the 7th anniversary that we didn't even think about besides the flood? Or is it just going to sort of harmlessly pass by and we have to deal with other circumstances from other days? I'm not entirely sure. But we also have this big looming specter above our heads from the very first episode of this season. The very last scene showed this older Nora. Jack attributed it to some sort of nuclear disaster. That did not seem to be the case, at least in this realm. How are we going to get there? I think that's the one major thing that we're sort of orienting our predictions towards, because otherwise it's pretty open territory.
I still say that. I still say that's the final scene of the series.
What, the nuclear holocaust? Like another nuclear holocaust?
No, whatever Nora, whatever the reason Nora's there, wherever she's at, we'll find out what was going on. That's the final scene.
Or we'll follow up that scene, I think. I don't think that'll be the final scene. I think maybe it'll show that
and then continue beyond that. That will be the final scene.
All right, I will...
It will all make sense, because we'll see this in the final episode, what happened to make that scene. I mean, there was no reason to show it if they weren't going to do something special with it. That's going to be the final scene.
Jack, to give vengeance to Mike for you, Price is writing him. I'm going to say this scene, we will see beyond that scene. We'll lead up to it, and we'll see what happens beyond, which might be her riding her bike back to an old Kevin.
What percentage are you confident about?
All percent? I have to do is just, we just have to see even like two seconds after that scene, and I'm right, and you're wrong.
Are you 100% confident, 70% confident, 75% confident?
No, I'm 100% confident. I have the better stakes here.
I'm 99% confident.
A smidge.
Then I'm 98% confident. Screw you, Jack.
We booked the ends.
I just think that's going to be the final scene.
All right. We'll just have to wait and see. All right. Well, that's what we thought. Let's jump into some listener feedback, guys. What do you say?
Do it.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Listener feedback.
All right. It's listener feedback time. Got some emails to get into here. This first one up is from Adam. Hey, guys, longtime listener and I think first-time emailer. I'm saying this after listening to your Episode 6 podcast and Before 7 airs. I have a theory that's been growing a little bit for a few episodes. I think The Leftover is going to end similar to how Lost ended. Everyone together in the other place. I mean, everyone. All the departed, all the main characters except Nora. The machine, for whatever reason, didn't work on Nora. Maybe a Fargo tie-in. Kidding. But now Kevin, Lori, Matt, after dying of cancer, and even Nora's children and husband will be there. John and Evie, probably Patty and Meg too. Kevin's sending messages to future Nora trying to tell her that everyone's here and she should come too. Eventually she finds a way there, and ending will be everyone reuniting just like the end of season 2, but in the other place they all find their peace and move on. Kevin is the constant that is able to move between places. Eventually, everyone that can't continue in this world moves on to the next world. Jill and Tommy are happy and at peace now, so they can continue living their lives. But everyone else who is struggling to find meaning will move on together. Nora is the Jack of the finale, in the sense that everyone's waiting for her to come and join in them. Thoughts? Great podcast. Keep it up. Can't wait for Westworld season deuce. Neither can we. It interesting theory, other than I don't see how they could just basically do the same ending as Lost. I don't know how Damon could get away with that.
And also, is Adam defining the other place as the place that just got nuked, or is he thinking about like there's another place that this afterlife existed in? Assuming if you go through the machine, that's where you go to.
In fairness to Adam on this one, this is before episode 7 airs, so he didn't know that it got totally nuked.
Unfortunate timing, yeah.
Well, again, like I think, like Jay said, I like the theory, but I don't think that Lindelof goes that direction.
Well, especially considering the amount of crap that rained down on him that caused him to leave social media because of that ending. Do you really think he would want to repeat it all over again?
Well, there is a certain sense of like knowing Damon and his way, that it would almost be like the biggest middle finger he could do is just do that. But I don't see that happening.
I still say that we could see that the people that departed are the people we've been watching the whole time. I'll stick with that until I'm proven wrong.
All right, this next email is from Brett. Well, I just finished watching episode 7, and I have to say this season has been as perfect as TV can get. The writing, acting, music, and overall story are spectacular. I have full faith that they are going to be able to nail the landing with the finale. I've enjoyed the music in each episode. Until last season, I wasn't really familiar with Verdi's Nabucco. The Seattle Opera is performing it this summer, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. What have you three thought of the music selections this season? I have really enjoyed listening to Jay, Jack, and Mike discussing each week's episode. Brett. P.S. I checked with my bank, and they said biometric penis scanning was coming to my account soon. I started to get upset, then realized it was no big deal.
I think you might need to get a new bank, Brett. That does not sound like a bank.
It's a different kind of
bank.
Yeah,
there's my bank tellers, that homeless guy in the alley that I pass every day on the way to work.
Is it a sperm bank?
It could be a sperm bank. Or to Mike's point, it could just be a homeless guy in the corner. Yeah.
A guy with a cardboard box. There you go.
Yeah, except that's his bank. Yeah. But yeah, I think that I don't know if we're paying necessarily more attention to the music this season than last season. I mean, I'm obviously paying more attention because this is the first season that I'm covering it with you guys, but I do feel like there is some very significant music. I think it benefits from the fact that, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, Jay, every week seemed to have a different opening credit song, which I think obviously has its own significance. And you have things like the Wu-Tang song. There were a couple of songs this episode, though we've brought up instances in this podcast where music has been highly significant. Maybe it's just because we're seeing or hearing so much of it this season in particular. That's why we're talking more about it overall.
Also, too, with the different opening, you know, credit theme songs, I watch it. Whereas if it's just the same thing, I would fast forward through it and get to the start of the episode.
It does seem in season three that they've had more fun with the music selections.
I believe Uproxx actually just gave an interview with the music supervisor on the show, just because, I mean, the music choices are always on point, but I feel like what Brett is alluding to is that they've chosen even better or more songs, I should say, this season, which calls some attention to it.
Yeah, for sure. And again, just in good contrasting ways where they're still like on point for what's happening in the story, but also really make you pay attention to them. Like, it is almost in your face, you know, with the Wu-Tang Clan, or last week with the 1-800 Suicide by Gravediggaz. And then you had Aha's Take On Me, you know, blasting while, you know, the Nora and Kevin's relationship implodes in the hotel room. So yeah, it's been really good selections this season, but also very like, I don't want to say in your face, but very much to the forefront of the scenes that we've seen.
Can we also say, he said what a great season of television this has been for The Leftovers. Can we say I'm almost one episode away from being wrong that they were right for having a third season? Because I honestly thought there was no way. I mean, I don't think they've topped season two.
Yeah,
they haven't embarrassed themselves. I mean, it's been great television.
I was going to say it still goes 2-3-1 for me, just because I've been really enjoying season three. I think we've enjoyed some of the more polarizing episodes, like the Kevin Sr. episode, than some of our listeners out there. I do still feel like, unlike season two, maybe because we don't have as many episodes, we have given short shrift to characters like Tommy and Jill, who I think we all kind of want to say goodbye to, or sort of have their own moment where they're able to bid adieu, much like Matt, much like Lori, and it seems like we're deprived of that. So that's the only deterrent for me, is that in a show that really has such amazing performances and such a fantastic ensemble, unfortunately in this season, due to a limited number of minutes that you have per episode, you just can't get some of those ensemble members in the forefront.
I would agree with that. I feel this season's been really good. I think it's going towards a good conclusion. But season two, I think, was more, to me, more, or probably my favorite, if I had to pick that out of the three.
It'd be my favorite.
It's got an Empire Strikes Back kind of thing going on in terms of being middle of the story. But anywho, this next email is from Fitzy. Now, I will say it's just a forwarded email that he also sent to the post-show recaps Leftovers show. So, I don't know if we feel like we're getting their Leftovers.
So you know, we're I stepped on your joke there. Sorry, Jay.
Thanks.
It wasn't very good anyway.
Thanks.
But so it's already been read. It's already been.
They do a feedback show later on in the week, so technically
it's us.
On this email.
Oh, all right, so they get our sloppy seconds. That's perfect.
There we go. So I love this email already.
Number one, did the unless you have an identical twin brother, which is ridiculous line, serve as a second purpose, which was to kill my theory about David Burton having a twin and the real David Burton being dead after the hiking accident and his twin being killed by the lion two episodes? Or does the fact that Kevin does have a twin this episode add fuel to my theory David Burton does admit to being a fraud? Thoughts?
So, yeah, I believe that Brendan's theory back during Matt's episode was, you know, David Burton tells this theory to Matt about how he believes that Jesus didn't really resurrect, that there was a twin brother of Jesus who came out from behind the cave, and he figures that maybe David Burton was undergoing the same thing, that he also did not come back to life, and maybe the same thing is happening with Kevin as well. I mean, if this becomes a bunch of clones, we're looking into like the fifth day here of just clones on clones on clones on twins. That would be way too convoluted for me.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. But could happen.
Because then it becomes just a crutch, a writing crutch. It's like, oh, it's a twin. It's a twin. We can explain it all because they're all twins.
Would you say lazy writing, Jay?
No, I just think it would almost just be, it would lose meaning and weight to what they're doing. So, second part. I thought I'd want to see Lori in this episode, but I was actually relieved and really happy that we didn't take that turn because it would have added weight to this episode, and that episode didn't need it. I would agree. I agree. The possibility that Lori's still alive is out there, or there's many different theories you could take with that.
Yeah, and I think as well, it would sort of, like, Lori, I'm totally fine with, I think I talked about this last week, I'm totally fine not seeing Lori for the rest of the show because I feel like Lori got her send-off.
Yeah.
You know, why feel like you need to bring her back for an encore when she already played the last song and she's already left a good impression? I feel like sort of what Fitzy is talking about, I feel like that would bring a different meaning to everything that's going on. It might deter Kevin, it might distract him from whatever's going on with him when it very much should be about Kevin. So I'm totally fine with not seeing Lori here.
I think I agree with you because they can't top it.
Yeah,
like you said,
exactly.
The way it played out, it was like it was emotional. It was so well done that why bring her back and go, okay, we're going to take everything that we did so perfectly and try and you can't top it. So why do it?
Yeah. Number three. So Kevin made this place so he could find everyone at the end. Sorry, had to do it. Another loss. four, as much as I love this episode, I'm really struggling to figure out how we track from where this episode ended to where we are in that flash forward with Sarah Durst. On the other hand, I'm happy to let the mystery be and see where the show takes me because I'm excited to be surprised. And five, music article for Up Rocks and Alan Sippenwall, amazing discuss. I think you were talking about that earlier, Mike, correct?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, Fitzy, maybe there's a twin of Nora called Sarah Durst. Maybe you were right the whole time, man.
Oh, man. Thanks for everything, friends. Fitzy. All right. This next email is from somebody that may or may not be a part of the Fisher contingency, Ethan. Hi, guys. I love this episode all queued up for next week. The only thing I may have called this season and not even here, just at home, the opening credits would be at some point the first season music, so I hope we will get the Lester let the mystery be next week. I agree. Like when it was this one, I was like, I hope the last episode is Let the Mystery Be, because I feel like that would be appropriate for the last episode. But we'll see. Really disgusted by the selfishness of the apostles here, especially Grace and Senior. The conversation between Junior and Senior between the hotel trips and the bathroom taken alone is a very sad portrait of two very disturbed people. Very happy to see Kevin and Patty verbally sparring, one of my favorite parts of the show, so it was exciting to have it here. The less said about Meg and Conway, the better. Line of the show, unless you have an identical twin brother, which would be ridiculous. I am sure Kevin Sr. went through absolute hell thinking he killed his son. I just wish it showed a little more when Kevin woke up. The last shot of the episode in the hotel land reminded me a lot of the end of the incident in season 5 of Lost, Fade to White, and the last shot of Fight Club, cue where is my mind. What struck me is that the questions we had for almost 7 episodes had been almost entirely thrown out the window. We are along for the ride at this point. I guess the main thing is that I wasn't expecting what I saw, and I have absolutely no clue about next week, and that's why I love the show. Also, just to point out that I'm the guy who said the machine would have no significance going into the finale, so my average of 0 correct predictions remains intact. Yay me!
you still could be right.
See you guys, Sniff, next week. Ethan, the Protocol Fisher.
oh, wait. Did I just say he could be right?
No. P.S.
No chance.
P.S. After next week, I'll make sure I'll get all my scuba gear using the Jay and Jack Amazon portal.
Perfect. I agree with a lot of what Ethan said. I mean, we sort of talked about it at the end of this episode that I think a lot of our questions have been thrown out the window. We've been building to this big cataclysmic event that ended up sort of not happening. And I agree with him that the Patty-Kevin dynamic was one of the best parts. Having Ann Dowd in there for the majority of season 2 was fantastic. And so we were lacking a little bit. So it was good to like see it come back for albeit one episode this season. So I was very happy to see Patty back for a myriad of reasons.
Agreed. And Ethan, don't despair. There will be more TV in the fall, and we got Game of Thrones during the summer, so it's gonna be fine. It's gonna be okay.
I know. Did you guys see that teaser yet?
Yeah,
I did see it.
It's gonna be awesome.
So Ethan, you can write into the Game of Thrones to be wrong all the time.
All right. Last email here from Jamie. Hey, guys, what a weird episode. The most powerful man in the world is back with his most powerful adversary. It was great to see Patty again, and it was great to see the return of the most amazing suit. Such a great suit. Apparently, in the other place, dog killers, Rue killers, bus bombers, and bossy chain smokers can really move up in the world.
She didn't blow up the bus.
No. She just
pretended.
She just, traumatized a bunch of children.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can't call her a bus blower upper if she didn't do it. I mean, just a psych.
I love that in season 2's episode 7, Patty was blocking the key to Kevin's handcuffs, which led him down the path to drinking poison and entering the other place. And in this season's episode 7, Patty was wearing one of the keys in order to destroy the other place. There is so much to talk about, but I'll end this with my favorite moment, the dual Kevin F you across the table.
Yeah.
That was great. That was great. Man.
That was a laugh out loud moment.
Man, I'm going to miss this show. It's brilliant, Jamie. Can we say Justin Theroux? His FUs are magical. Magical.
He's good at the FUs. If there was an Emmy for FU, he wins.
Well, we didn't. We're never going to get another FU Laurie. So
you don't know
presumably.
That.
That's true.
You don't know that.
We don't know for sure. Well, thank you everybody for your feedback. One episode of Leftovers left to go. Currently seeing if we'll do a predictions podcast, but more to come on that. But at the very least, you will have Jay, Jack, and Mike here with you after the finale. Next week, so that should be fun. Last episode ever.
Can't believe that,
which is crazy.
I'm gonna mess this show.
Jack, this is your last chance to give a crackpot theory. And before we recorded, you said that you had possibly the best one you've ever come up with. So,
I didn't say that, but that's okay.
So here it is, Jack's
After being right this week with the one of the worlds being destroyed by nuclear.
You didn't say one of the worlds.
If you go back and check the tape, I said one of the worlds would be destroyed by.
All right.
Yeah. What I said at the beginning of this episode before we recorded, to tell the truth, I said, after this episode, I have no friggin' idea what's going on.
Just guess. What do you think is going to happen?
I'm going to say that Kevin is going to die and not come back.
Okay. Why?
Why not? I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. That's why I still say that. Or Matt could kill Kevin to keep him out of the machine. And if that's I don't know. I really don't know what's going on. That's my theory. And yeah, sure, I'm sticking with it. I have nothing. Give me your hot take, Mike. I literally don't know what's going to happen.
All right, Mike, you got a hot take for us?
I don't know. My hot take builds off of your crackpot theory. So if you're giving me something cold, I'm going to have to overcompensate. Okay, here's a hot take. I think Kevin Sr. will not survive to the end of the episode.
Ooh.
I think that now that he has sort of lost his purpose, I think he was building himself up as the big savior. When it turned out not to be the case, I don't know if he necessarily has a reason to live anymore because he listened to the voices and look where it got him. So we're going to see.
So he goes scuba diving.
Yeah, maybe it might be scuba time for Kevin Sr. or maybe he gets involved. I mean, he is also a pretty old man as well. Maybe, you know, the exhaustion finally catches up to him. I'm not entirely sure, but I guess that'll be my hot take to compensate lukewarm take.
I like that. But I'm going to say I like your because he does. He's you could see at the end he was defeated.
Yeah,
it's on that true. Roof. But also you put your son through what you've put your son through. Also,
you know, through death
for something that didn't need to be done, even though it did help Kevin out.
So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Jay, what's your weak take?
I'm just the host of the show. I'm not the intelligent person.
You should give something. Give your weak take.
Let's see. What do I think's going to happen? I think that there will be, we'll go up to the scene where we see Sarah Durst saying she doesn't know Kevin. She'll ride her bike back to wherever she lives with Kevin. It'll be an old Kevin as well, and they're living out their lives, happy, peaceful, and removed from the rest of the world.
Does he have a gray beard or does he not?
I think it's a gray beard, and he has picked up the hobby of taxidermy.
To be sure it's Kevin, do we have to go for the identification?
maybe there'll be some male nudity. Who knows? Maybe it'll end on a high note. We don't know for sure. But that is my hot take.
You can't have a hot.
That's Mike's. Mike is hot take. Your crackpot theory. What would be mine?
Weak sauce.
Weak sauce.
Jay's weak sauce of the week.
That's good. I'll take it. That's good.
All right.
That will do it for this week's episode. Thank you for everybody that writing in for your feedback. We will be recording Monday after the finale, so if you want your feedback in to be discussed on this podcast, give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call it's hard.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Call time with your questions, comments, and or theories. Also, send an email to leftoversjj at...
gmail.com.
That's leftoversjj at
gmail.com.
Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJack group. On that group, there's threads for just about every TV show that comes on, including The Leftovers, and there's live discussions happening on that as the show airs and afterwards, of course. We have a fun, exclusive patrons-only Facebook group where a lot of voting and things that kind of shape the shows in different ways happen. You can have access to this exclusive Facebook page by contributing $5 or more a month to our Patreon over at patreon.com/JayandJack. We are a listener-supported podcast, and thank you to all 150-plus patrons that support this show. And at the different levels that you support, there's a different kind of thank you gifts along the way to thank you for your contributions to making these things possible. If you can't contribute money every single month, that's perfectly fine. These shows are free for everybody to enjoy. There's other ways you can do it. If you shop on Amazon, if you use our link, jayandjack.com/Amazon, a small percentage of each of those things you purchase will also go to the Jay and Jack Productions fold. So another way to help support these podcasts and our podcasters that work very hard every single week, except for Jack. Thank you so much, everybody. Any final thoughts, any final words here to our podcast dais?
Can't believe we only have 1 week left. I'm going to contemplate on everything I love about the show over the next 7 days. I mean, I won't forget about it after the time passes, but I'm so excited to not be prepared for what's about to happen in the next episode. Again, we only have this one scene from the future to go off of, but otherwise we have absolutely no idea what's coming. And that's what's made these past few episodes so exciting. And that's what's going to make this next episode so exciting as well.
I agree.
Do we go back to 1800s Seventh-day Adventist timeline at all, or is that just...
I mean, we didn't go back to the cave during season two. I think that season three opener was just a way to explain the possible origins of the Guilty Remnant, or this idea of, you know, what it means to be someone who feels left behind in a way, and how your faith can sort of detract you from everything around you. So I don't feel like they necessarily need to go back to the well on that. It seems like we moved on in so many ways from that.
Considering that I forgot all about that till you mentioned it. So
well, there you go.
Why go back to it?
Agreed.
Maybe we get. I know Mike does a podcast where has to watch a movie that he's recommended to watch. Maybe we, after the dust settles, you guys will all watch Bachelor Party and come and talk about it.
Perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
That sounds great.
It's a movie you'll at least laugh at. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, but it was comedy gold 30 years ago.
Speaking of podcasts that Mike does a billion, including a Fargo podcast on the Jay and Jack Network with Jeremiah Panhorst. How many episodes are left of Fargo right now?
Four? Yeah, we just had episode 6. I won't spoil anything, but a big... shocking episode. So much fun to talk about with Jeremiah. I'm really excited with the way this season has been going. We've got 4 episodes to go and so much more Carrie Coon to watch, which makes me even more excited. So yeah, check that out. We've been having a lot of fun so far.
Awesome. And then you hinted, I think it was last week, your episode with Rob from Rob Has a Podcast is coming up. Your guest's spot there, or
it already happened.
It has happened.
Yeah, if you happen to be at a point in your watching of Survivor Game Changers where you have not watched the finale yet, I got to be on with Rob Cesternino a couple weeks ago to answer the feedback and voicemails, the spot that I get to do with Rob habitually and that I really enjoy doing. We had a lot of fun with that one. So even if you've watched the finale, feel free to check it out and watch us be silly for almost 2 hours.
it seems the consensus from a lot of the podcast world is this season not one of the hottest seasons for a lot of the diehard fans, it seems.
Well, you can check out Jay, Jack, and Colleen's opinion directly on that.
Yes, you can.
Without spoiling who won, were you satisfied with who won?
I was satisfied with who won. I do think, unfortunately, this season underwent a bit of choppy storytelling. I think that there is some reason behind that, considering that all the big people went out in the premiere, so you had to dedicate a good amount of time to them. As a result, you don't have too much time to dedicate to the people who went very far. So unfortunately, I feel like going into this finale, there really were only about 3 people that I could see winning, but the person who won will happen to be on that list. So I was happy in that regard.
You think there are too many ways to have immunity?
I think if anything,
just
I think
it's like a big Survivor referendum by the end of this podcast.
Well, I think it fell under the weight of like trying to be a game changer, and I think it just influenced a little too much in putting all these game changes.
Because that was
good. Yeah, I said this on the podcast with Rob. They're going to scale it back. They threw everything in there in the kitchen sink all in one season because they, as you said, they wanted to make this like we want to keep these people on their feet. I think between that and the fact that maybe some of these twists might have resulted in some bigger names going home, now that we have new people going out again in the fall, they're definitely going to scale things back.
We'll just have to wait and see. But you can find out full opinions there. Rob has a podcast, the best, I think, in the Survivor podcasting world. But we have a humble little one as well that you can check out. But anywho... I think that's a good place to close it out. A little bit of Survivor talk. We'll see everybody next week for the last ever episode of The Leftovers. And I guess The Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike, right?
Wow.
It's the end. This is the end.
This is the end. That's how it's the show's going to end.
Yeah, now we're not going to have that scene. It's going to close with This is the End.
It's by the Doors, right? So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Another song that I know, so maybe they'll do that for me.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.